Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. One of the most, honestly, best writers out there right now, covering what's happening on Planet Chaos these days, and somebody that's been on the show many times. I'm very honored to welcome back Alex Craner. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thank you. Always good to be with you, Mel. Thank you.
Thank you. You have become a total, all of my subscribers always comment about how insightful you are, how much you bring to the table. I do want to say, you put out a tweet this morning about something I've been following and not many other people have, which is Gonzalo Lira being a political prisoner. I watched him the first time. If people don't know who he is, he's a dual citizen of the US and Chile, and he was covering the Ukraine war before it started from Ukraine. He lived in Kyiv, and he was very honest about what was going on as somebody living there on the ground. I watched him regularly all the time. There was a scare early on, and then they came and they took him. He said, if I'm gone in 12 hours, they got me. He has been imprisoned for putting out YouTube videos, basically. The last one was about the history of Ukraine and how we got where we are. His story is horrifying. He's been tortured. He's been extorted. He's been just unbelievable, unfathomable. A journalist, basically, that was putting out YouTube videos was arrested. And it turns out that Zelensky has arrested many of journalists that have disappeared into the gulag. And hearing what happened to him, you can assume that's happened to everyone. And he is now has left the country because he has doomed to serve in a gulag for free speech that was violated, according to Zelensky. And I just wanted your thoughts on this, because when I look at this, and I know that the U.S. taxpayers are really funding what's going on in Ukraine, they should know what's happening to people like Lira and others. So what's your take on that whole situation and the responsibility behind it?
Well, Mel, my first reaction was I was very relieved, because, you know, all we knew is that he vanished. And then, you know, like, you can just imagine what could have been going on. And you even think, like, they might have killed him. We wouldn't know. Right. And so when I saw the video of him, first, I could not believe it. And then I watched a little bit, and then I realized that it's the real thing, that it's after he'd been arrested, so that he's alive and right. In freedom. I was greatly relieved. And so all the stories about torture, you know, like, it's grueling, but I think the overwhelming impression is that this is great news. So
yes,
I didn't even see videos part two or part three, you know, like, this was like, I literally found this video at about 1:30 a.m. And I watched one, and then I thought I'd watch the other one, and then my day went. Today, right. My day went like all over the place. But, you know, on the point of Ukraine being some kind of a beacon of freedom and democracy in Eastern Europe, that's obviously been a complete lie. It's exactly the opposite. It has all the hallmarks of a fascist regime, you know, and we know what the hallmarks of a fascist regime is. Right. It's ruled by terror. It's oppression. It's radical intolerance of anything that doesn't suit the ruling establishment. It includes racism, intolerance towards, you know, Russians, Poles, Jews, and so forth. And you know, they have displayed this in practice since before this war. I mean, practically right. Since from. Even from before the 2014 coup, you know, there's been this anti-Russian hysteria that was starting to take root in Ukraine. You know, Ukraine had been in a profound social and economic crisis practically since the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991. And, you know, that's fertile ground for that kind of a social reaction, intolerance and hatred, because then you introduce the ideology of a great nation, but which has fallen on its knees because of these other people, you know, like, namely the Russian Jewish mafia. That's who was their favorite boogeyman there. And so even under Zelensky, who was swept into office, I think with 72-74% support among the Ukrainian people, he was voted in because he promised to make peace, because he promised to return all the rights that, that had been taken away to the Russian people, and Ukrainians wanted peace. And so, as it often happens with these demagogues, he just told them what he knew they wanted to hear. And he kind of held his place until the day Joe Biden walked into the White House. So he had to behave himself while Donald Trump was in the White House. And so the situation was in a bit of a stalemate. But the day Joe Biden was in power, Zelensky flipped completely and his true colors came through. And, you know, several months later, we were in a war. Well, a year later, we were in a war that is still at risk of becoming World War III and a nuclear Armageddon. It could happen.
Yeah. And the scary part is that we had the daughter of a Russian philosopher that was assassinated along the way. We have 20 people, including more now, but in at first 20 journalists, including American journalists. And the thing that bothers me the most is that Lyra is has a U.S. passport, and it appears Chile is the only people that even went and looked in on him. I did read all his stuff and watch it, and he was terribly tortured. And when they came and checked in on him, a welfare check, he was so beaten that his bruises were green. And the stories are terrible. But the U.S. didn't do anything at all. And they haven't for any of the journalists on or, you know, I think Roger Waters is on their hit list, too. And it's basically a hit list, which is terrifying. But again, this goes back to the American people are funding this. OK, and that is where the line crosses, because to me, you know, this responsibility and judgment mentality is who's responsible for this kind of behavior. I mean, we all have watched, you and I both have spoken many times about Julian Assange and this incomprehensible, I think, cruelty, at lack of humanity. But again, the American people are seeing this happening in America. And I believe still in America, people think it could never happen here. But the regime that's in place right now is allowing it to happen in Ukraine. And I just want people to understand that this is kind of the path. Is you cannot speak out. He was doing YouTube videos and writing on Twitter, and he is facing 8 years in a straight up work camp gulag. And people in America look at it and think, well, it's over there. And I don't think that that's the end game here.
Well, you know, it doesn't start all at once. You know, it starts gradually, but it has begun to happen. You know, we had Chelsea Manning. We had assassinations of various, you know, they, when somebody is a real threat to them, assassination becomes an option. You know, there's yeah. lighter versions, character assassination, you know, firing people from their job like Tucker Carlson. But, you know, like there was this journalist, Gary Webb, who exposed the CIA for being the mothership of drug trafficking in the United States, and they took him out. He was killed. Yeah. And then there was another journalist for Rolling Stone. His name now escapes me, but he was assassinated not long ago, maybe 10 years ago.
In Los Angeles.
Yeah. And, you know, Chelsea Manning was tortured and imprisoned essentially for, you know, letting the truth out. And I think that this is the same reason why the United States didn't take care of Gonzalo Lira, is because he was making their proxy look bad and he was letting the truth be known. Yeah. So, you know, it's nothing unusual, but, you know, if you don't check it, if you don't push back, it metastasizes and people should never, you know, I lived in the United States. I studied in the United States. You know, like I thought that it was kind of odd that they were really putting people to sleep by convincing the American people that they live in this magical self-perfecting system, that all you have to do is stay passive and acquiesce, and it's just going to by magic perfect itself because of these blah, blah checks and balances and so forth. Well, you know, obviously it doesn't quite work like that. If people are put to sleep and they don't push back and they don't, scrutinize what the politicians and leaders are doing, then it goes off the rails. And, you know, we've always known that, you know, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Yeah. And, you know, vigilance means having access to true information. And that's why the people who provide true information are being systematically silenced in one way or another. Okay, today we have some real pushback, and we have new media that are very, very difficult to control for them. And they are, you know, obviously a lot of what they thought they were going to be able to do, they are not able to do. But, you know, those forces and those impulses are there, and they are, they mean business.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people that do what I do, I know behind the scenes, live in fear, you know, really do live in the idea that we are in a situation right now where anyone could come knock at your door because of a YouTube video in America. And people have to understand that we've had the Twitter files. Now we have the Facebook files, which are even worse. I'm assuming that the Google files and YouTube files are just as bad, if not worse, than the first two. So, but what we are talking about is a total disconnect between reality and you know, where we are, because this is the regime. This is, in my opinion, an installed regime. And on top of that, you put out a great essay on your Substack and Trend Compass. And I want to talk about that because this has to do with that. You wrote, What is Law? And how you were at this event not too long ago, and you were kind of, your eyes were open to something you never thought about. And I think most people don't think about what is law, what are we entitled to as humans born onto planet Earth in general? Is there something bigger than, you know, the Constitution, Bill of Rights in America might be the best there is in the world, but if it's not honored, what's above that? And there is something above that. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that particular essay. I'm going to put a link below because everyone should read that, because we should all right now be thinking about what law is, who determines that, and what is a human born on this planet is your bestowed to you, inalienable rights, they would say. So tell me a little bit about the realization when you were listening to the three speakers, they're all great, that we're talking about what is law and freedom and sovereignty and how it hit you and why you wrote the essay.
Yeah. So, this was in my panel. So this was Sunday, 4th June. And Dolores Cahill went up on stage, and, you know, I knew her as a fighter against the lockdowns and the vaccinations and so forth. And then, you know, like her remarks were different from what I kind of expected. And then what really got my attention is when she said that, like, well, most people think the Constitution is like the top of the hierarchy of law in any society. But what most people don't know is that Constitution is only about halfway up that hierarchy. And I thought, huh? What? And so this is Dolores Cahill. So I don't expect that she's talking rubbish. So I really paid attention. And this was all completely new to me. So I really needed to go and see her speech and the another two speakers who spoke basically about the same thing, or at least, you know, it was all very consistent. And, you know, it brought for the idea, which I think we all intuitively know, we just forget it, that, you know, we are born into this world and we are born free. And the world in which we're brought is our birthright. as it is for, you know, like for any animal, for, right. you know, like any bird, who's right. to say where you may fly, where you may not fly, you know, what you may eat, what you may not eat, who you might associate with or not. And I think that living in this matrix, which is kind of grown larger and more complex by accretion, we got used to these rules. And this is another little bit of a culture shock to me, because, you know, like I moved from the socialist world, where we lived in a society ruled by a one-party communist, one-party communist rule. And I went to the United States. And the shocking thing to me was that I felt less free in the United States. Not because the communist regime was so wonderful, but because I think it was kind of inert and inefficient. So it left a lot of maneuvering space, a lot of leeway to, you know, ordinary humanity, where, you know, like you just kind of live the way you lived, and whatever wasn't forbidden was legal, right? That's how I understood things. And then I came to the United States where, you know, people were, my perception, people were overly concerned about breaking rules. And, oh my God, this must be illegal. Oh my God, this must be totally illegal. And I'm like, what says who? It's not written anywhere. I don't see any signs that it's illegal. So I'm doing it. And so, you know, I had this conflict a lot because my ex-wife is American. And so we always had this. And I always had to say, like, hey, look, nobody said that this was illegal. Well, to me, that means it's not. And she'll be like, oh, my God, we're going to get so caught. We're going to get in trouble.
Right. And like so, walking on land somewhere. Like you mean
exactly.
like walking.
Exactly. You know, like right. there were zero no trespassing signs in former Yugoslavia. So you could go anywhere and you could do anything. You know, like if you wanted to hunt, yeah. you hunted. If you wanted to fish, you fished. If you wanted to collect blueberries or mushrooms, that's what you did. It's not like that anymore. And then when I came to the United States, you know, I lived in a place called Simi Valley by Los Angeles. And there was like it's actually a beautiful valley. The town is a bit boring, but the landscape is beautiful. And I wanted to go explore the hills around there because, you know, there was Simi is the name from like an Indian tribe that used to exist there.
Right.
Then like everywhere I wanted to walk, it said private property, no trespassing. So, you know, many, many, many more boundaries, many, many more rules, many more restrictions. And I think that with time, we all got just used to all that. We got used to thinking that we are only allowed to do what isn't forbidden. You know, rather than unless it's forbidden, it's free. And there better be a good reason for it being forbidden. You know, and so this conference in Bath in UK kind of just brought all this back to me. And I thought, oh my God, these are extraordinarily important ideas. And I wanted to kind of condense these three speeches into, you know, like into something that is let's say readily digestible, right. but that kind of brings it back to the people's awareness. Because I think that once it's pointed out to you, it's clear, because I think that we all intuitively actually function this way. We just kind of forgot. We got hypnotized into following the rules and staying in our lane and not straying out of the matrix and so forth. And then we forgot that this whole world outside the matrix is our birthright. And so I think, I wrote that essay, you know, because I wanted to kind of, amplify the idea and let it out for, you know, for people who weren't able to participate in that conference.
Yeah, it's also to remind people that that is true. I mean, our biggest problem, I think, in America is the gigantic bureaucracy and many, many agencies that are unconstitutional, period. If I ever got a case that got to the Supreme Court, they would all probably be dismantled. But because of where we are now, I believe lobbyists have more power than politicians. And other things are going on. We have all kinds of geopolitical stuff. But the truth of the matter is that what you're talking about, especially because I lived in California for 18 years, and there's it's very obvious there because of the outdoor lifestyle. But, you know, the EPA, or even if you go drive through New Mexico, you know, literally the entire New Mexico for 3 hours is like, you cannot stop us. This property belongs to the government. Right now, to go to a national park in America, you have to go online and register. Like, all of this stuff is not real. It's imposed to control.
That is absolutely an insult. Land of the free, and you have to register with the government to visit a national park. You are the national of that nation. Isn't that national park for whose maintenance you pay taxes your domain where you could move free? And this is exactly, you know, this is, so Karen Ruth Scomley exactly pointed out that the way we give up our birthright is by registering. You know, because by natural law, we are sovereign beings. We are born with inalienable rights to free speech, to privacy, to travel, you know, moving around and things like that. And then the way, so because we are a divine creation, you can say creation of nature or creation of God or whatever, but to deprive us of our liberty, the state has to make us the creation of the state. And they achieve this by getting us to register. That's exactly it. They get us to register at birth. They get us to register our cars, our, you know, like our titles, our, all of these things. And then suddenly we are cogs in this big matrix rather than sovereign beings who have inalienable right to go wherever we please, including the national park that's there for us, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's, you know, that's a trick. And we got used to complying as well because it's easier, it's more convenient. You know, like if I go to the national park without registering, might get in a little bit of trouble. I'm gonna have to get into an argument, and then I'm gonna have to explain the natural law to some clerk there or some, you know, guardian. I'll just register. But that's exactly the part where we are accepting a compromise, and we are agreeing to becoming the cog in the matrix. And there's, you know, like, okay, so I haven't written about this, but there's something about agreement that I just came to realize. You know, I started reading. I have to show you this because this book is for me like I stumbled into a candy store where everything's free. Yeah.
Okay.
Collapse of Antiquity by Michael Hudson. I couldn't recommend it highly enough. And so Michael Hudson paints this picture where you realize that everything that's happening today was happening almost exactly like this in Rome and in Greece.
Right.
But like the similarities are unbelievable. You never understood this. And so, you know, like there's these moneylenders in Greece and in Rome, and they're absolutely rapacious and they're abusive, and they are extorting cities and individuals and businesses with usury that you know, that would blow your mind. Yeah. Then you wonder, why would anybody just not default? Just say, like, you know, the hell with you. I'm not paying you back. I already pay you back the principal. I pay you back more than that. It's over. But, you know, like, and then I realized, like, people made agreements. They agreed to something. And now this gives the other side the legitimate power to enforce that agreement. And I realized, with, you know, like, I noticed this with my children. Okay, so you know how kids are. If you want them to do something that they don't want to do, they can be extremely feisty, and you know, like you just can't get them to.
Right.
And then I learned, like, okay, so they're on the playground. We have to go home, and I was like, okay, kids, we're going home. No, 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 and you can't get them to go. And then I realized if I tell them, like, okay, kids, we're gonna have to go home soon, how much time do you need? And then they'll say, like, oh, please, 10 more minutes, 10 more minutes. then after 10 minutes, you say like, okay, let's go. And they're like, okay.
Right.
You know, like, because they agreed.
Right.
And so now they are ready to comply. But before getting their agreement, it would be like, I don't know, like herding cats. It just doesn't work. And then I realized that as we agree to things, we really at some, I don't know if it's psychological or spiritual level, we kind of put ourselves into a subservient position. But if it is as easy to give agreement, you know, like every time you install some piece of software and update, whatever, they always ask you to agree. Nobody ever reads it. I don't either. You right. just go like agree, like just get it over with. And well, if it's as, and then they, you know, like, and then they say like, well, no, everything we're doing to you, all this surveillance and spying and la, 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 you agreed to it all. And they're right. Well, if it's as easy to give agreement, it should be equally easy to revoke it.
Right now is our 20-year anniversary of me inventing my pillow.
Oh, wow.
So all my employees and I, we made a commercial. It's a limited edition 20-year anniversary my pillow. It comes out this week. They can get it here, though.
Right from the Mel K code, please.
Use the Mel K code. Go there right now. We already put it up online. There's a limited edition My Pillow at $69.98, but you get it for ready for this queen size $19.98 with your promo
me.
Code.
Look at you, Mel K. Yeah. Code at My Pillow right now.
So we should start thinking about not only being a bit more discerning about what we agree to, but we should also explicitly revoke agreements when we change our minds about it. I mean, yeah. You know, like it's a legit thing because they do it all the time. You know, like the other side does it all the time. They don't, you know, like the sanctity of contracts is just for us, not for them.
Right.
You know, like
exactly.
If they want to increase, if they want to plunder your pension fund, then they do it. They don't think twice about it. If they promise in the election cycle no more war and then they open another couple of wars all the same, they do it. If they want to increase your retirement age from 62 to 64 to 68 to 75, whatever, they don't mind if they just revoke that agreement like that.
Right.
So we should do the same. And we should simply claim our freedom because it's already ours. And we should claim our right to free speech because it's already ours. And we should claim it not by going begging the government to let us use our free speech, but simply by using it, by speaking out. That's it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so your question was about my essay and, you know, like it triggered an avalanche. I'm sorry.
No, that's good. But this is stuff we need to talk about because I was just talking the other day. People are very disturbed, obviously, in America. Either they've chosen some side, so they're caught in the illusion of choice as if we don't have a captured uniparty that's being run by outside entities. But at the same time, we have, you know, this ongoing persecution of Trump for things that, you know, so many people, including Hillary Clinton, it was like, well, whatever. And then we have the leading political opponent. We have all of this corruption with Joe Biden and his family that's like unbelievable. And you can't believe that Obama and Clinton, all of them didn't know or weren't involved. Half of their kids were involved in Burisma. Then, you know, then we have this pending 2024 and people are looking at all of this. And I think most people right now, at least that I know and I talk to, feel homeless in the political system in America right now. They feel that they are out there. They don't really align with either party. But in America, like you're talking about with the agreement, they've set up, I think the really important part for Americans to realize right now is they knock people out in the primary. So a lot of great candidates that might really have our best interests at heart and really would be working for we the people are knocked out in the primary in America. And the problem with that is the DNC and RNC, GOP and Democratic Party, are picking who they want in the actual races. So they are doing everything they can, especially financially, to knock out like the good man who, you know, started a business in a small town, built it up, 2,000 people have jobs through him. He looks at his town and he wants to be mayor. Well, he's not going to go along with what the DNC talking points are. So they're going to figure out a way to knock him out before the primary. Therefore, the American people have no idea that there were other options. And that's another place where we are right now. And you've lived in America, but you're not here now. And looking in here, I think there's a lot of people in America that just feel totally heartbroken, because in order to participate in the primary session, you have to pick a side. And most people don't feel aligned with either side right now. Most people I talk to or I hear from, which is, it's a tricky place to be, because we have all these people that feel, you know, orphaned from the political system. So what are you seeing from your vantage point of what is going on here right now as we slide into another election season where the people are totally, I feel like, disenchanted or disillusioned?
I don't know. I think that things are getting extremely interesting. You know, it's no longer just the slugfest between Trump and the DNC and the rhinos. Now there's Robert F. Kennedy in the race, and you know that's going to make things a lot more interesting. So maybe some genuine options are emerging, but yeah, obviously they're going to be one or the other party. But beyond that, I think that the real politics, where people should never feel homeless, is the local politics, and you know, that's where you don't have to feel helpless. You can just, you know, be active, pay attention to things, you know, support your community, your neighbors, bring action to change things around, put pressure on your local, whatever you have, leaders, counselors, mayors, sheriffs, and so forth. And try to change try to change things in your local community.
Yeah. And I've been thinking that we also have to reframe. I see in America, all around the world, where you are too, but especially in America, I think we need to start as citizens of this country. You're talking about, you know, our inalienable rights and that this is, you know, supposed to be a free country. But I think that we have to reframe our relationship with the government, because one thing that I notice also in Europe and a lot of other places, but it's particularly here, a mayor or a senator or a congressman or a governor or, you know, executive branch, a judge, as soon as they win election, it's like as if they are above us. And they get special treatment and special perks, and we treat them like kind of royalty of some sort. When it's really, I think one of the big things maybe that in going forward where we are is to start to reframe what government means to us, where what the citizen relationship is to the government, because it's gotten totally upside down. We're really not a true democracy. Again, we're a constitutional republic, but we don't have real information. There's all kinds of outside money. We got lobbyists, we got foreign stuff, we got think tanks. But the truth of the matter is these are supposed to be public servants. You know, our Constitution didn't make it that they were anointing kings and queens and princes and princesses. Yet once you get into the system here, the relationship between the citizen and the government becomes very, I think, not what was intended. And I think there needs to be a reframing in leaders and what that means to the citizens. And we should probably start thinking about treating leaders as if they work for us, because they do.
No, I totally agree with you, Mel. I don't know exactly how this should be done, but I'm pretty convinced that it has to go bottom up. It has to come bottom up. And then, you know, the thing that I keep repeating is that we're not going to get very far until we fix the money system. You know, it really is literally the root of all evil. It's the fraud that poisons all other relations in society. You know, you see how easy it is to destroy people if you own the media, if you fund the public relations companies and the think tanks. And even if somebody, you know, like I observed that many people go into politics with earnest, sincere intentions. They want to improve the world. But then they're pulled in all kinds of different directions, why don't you compromise over this so that we might help you with that you care about, or Wouldn't it be nice if you would win a like kind of a bigger office, and we'll fund you, and then you'll be more powerful, and then you'll be able to make a greater difference. And then at some point they sit you down and they tell you, look, there's insiders and there's outsiders in this society. And then you have to make up your mind. Are you going to become a Bernie Sanders, or are you going to become a Ralph Nader? You know, like, and if you're going to become a Bernie Sanders, you're going to have to betray the people that place their trusts and hopes in you. And if you're going to become a Ralph Nader, you're going to be completely marginalized and kicked to the outside. And so, you know, this can be done because the money is controlled in few hands. And, you know, this is the oligarchy, and the oligarchy controls the public relations and the media and the secret services and the mob and all of the levers of power that can, you know, destroy your reputation, force you out of a job, character assassinate you, up to, you know, actual physical assassinations. So I think that we need very radical reforms. Yeah. And you know, the system has built defenses against reforms, and they you know, they well, we all saw what happened to Trump and how difficult it was for him to get anything done. But I think that the more people understand the way this oligarchy operates and what their goals are and what all the pitfalls are, the better we'll be able to navigate around those and actually get some kind of a real change.
Yeah. I think also you spoke a little, and people don't really, I mean, there's really no news in America right now on the main channels or anything, but I never hear anyone talk about the EU. And in my estimation, looking back from the Marshall Plan forward, it appears that the EU, in my estimation, is some kind of, because if you read the real books or Tragedy and Hope or about Rockefeller back in the day or what Kissinger or the Grand Chessboard, all that stuff that you and I, you know, find fascinating and most people would fall asleep. But if you put that all together now and look at where we are now, it really does appear, even seeing Kissinger with G, you know, recently and some of the other stuff going on, it appears that the EU was likely the first of what they talked about many times in their writings of kind of this Hunger Games type division of the planet that needed to be done differently than nation states, as they all, the global governance folk call nation states are done. You know, well, what comes in their place? And it appears the EU was the easiest one to do for many reasons. But a lot of people are out there, you one of them, saying the EU is in serious trouble, especially if certain things happen. So before we end, I just wanted you to kind of explain to my audience kind of what is going on in the EU, because from here, it looks like it's a total disaster, but there's these World Economic Forum types and, you know, these oligarchs out there acting like everything's fine. But if you listen to the actual journalists living there, everything's not fine, but it does appear very weakened. And I just wanted a little take on what is going on in the EU that we don't know.
Well, yeah, the EU has been, you know, Western empires' attempt to create a homogeneous political entity, you know, where they could erase national state sovereignty and make everything one homogeneous political unit, you know, have NATO there and, you know, use that to control continental Europe and Eastern Europe, because remember, the empire's overarching objective is to maintain hegemony over the Eurasian landmass. And so to do that, you need to control Eastern, Central and Eastern Europe. And so I guess that the EU was probably imagined as a solution to that. And the way to do that was, you know, to just like mix everything into like a uniform paste and then create this European national identity and get everybody to identify not as Germans and Italians and Poles and so forth, but as Europeans. well, this is obviously failing. And, you know, like, legally, this entity is a complete abomination. You know, the constitutions, the treaties, the governance model, everything is actually completely opposite of parliamentary democracy or representative democracy. You know, this is the rule of unaccountable government appointees, these apparatchiks who are not only incompetent, they're also thoroughly corrupt and corruptible, you know. So usually, you know, like the most corruptible ones float up to
rise
the top.
To the top.
Yeah. And so this is what we have in Europe. And the result is that, you know, more and more nations feel that this is not what we wanted. And that the, you know, the system is becoming increasingly oppressive, that it's moving in the opposite direction from freedom and prosperity. It's affirming these insane social experiments with LGBT. It's fear-mongering about the pandemics and climate change. And it's all gung-ho for war, you know, like war everywhere, all the time, you know. And and so I think it's kind of triggered the rise of populism in more and more countries. You know, you have it in Poland and Hungary, and to a good extent in Italy and Germany and France and Croatia and so forth. And so these populist movements are kind of percolating up to the political top, and now you have countries. I think, you know, obviously this can't be discussed in the open, but I think that many countries are actually, their leaderships are readying an exit, or they're readying contingency plans, because I think that many people by now are convinced that the EU is going to implode. And I'm one of them. And I think we're not far from that.
Yeah.
And
I mean, you said the whole time you thought that the euro was going to be the first currency that would actually... you know, really, really be a problem.
I don't know. Maybe it's going to be the euro, or maybe it's going to be the Japanese yen. But, you know, same difference. They're all going to collapse. Yeah. And so, you know, the bonds on, you know, European government bonds are going to crash. Interest rates are going to skyrocket. The government finances are going to collapse. We're going to find ourselves into a profound crisis. And, you know, what's going on now, it's making things a lot worse. You know, they bet the ranch on the war in Ukraine. They lost. They were being extremely arrogant. They imposed all these suicidal sanctions on Russia because they thought they could count on their former colonial dependencies. Well, now they're losing that, too. So I think that we're going into a winter of severe discontent in Europe. And I wouldn't be surprised that within a year or two or three, both the European Union and the NATO actually collapse.
Yeah, and it does seem, and you're always optimistic and believe in God, as I do, that there's still a bigger planet play. But it does appear that the nations in Europe, even though they're not getting much press, that there is a populist movement. It's funny because I was looking at the documents for this Summit of the Futures upcoming UN summit that the whole world should boycott and mock. But it's like as a world, like it has a world constitution or common law or common whatever agenda. But whatever the case may be, I was looking at it and it was shaming populism in the documents. Like populism and white supremacy are the same thing. They're evil. They're terrible. People that still want nation states are out of touch. Where it's like, I think that's the only way back is the opposite.
It's all extreme right. And then if you want to protect your child on top of that, then you're out and out fascist terrorist threat.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So we're getting to the point of absolute, like where we have to just call it what it is. It is insanity and mock it.
I think you need to bring together Steven Pinker, Sam Harris, and what's that physicist guy, Mr. Consensus? I forget. You need to get them all to contrive an intellectual justification for all this, and I think it still wouldn't work.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, any last words? Because I think that we are past the point. When we started about 2 years ago talking, it was all Great Reset. It was all, you know, we have no choice. I feel the complete opposite, but I know a lot of people are looking at it kind of, their day-to-day lives are now affected. We've been talking about it because that's what we do, but actual people out in the world, in America, at least, that I talk to or I see or I follow or look at, everyone seems to be hands up. So the solution is to take back your power. And that's kind of what your whole message is all the time. So I wanted you to kind of just close the show on where you think we are in terms of, you know, taking back that power to the people.
Well, I think we're close. And I think that, you know, many people who were maybe a little bit ahead of the curve tend to feel frustrated because not everybody gets it. But I think that a lot of people do get it. Maybe it's at an intuitive level. Maybe the picture is foggy and the ideas are vague. But, you know, like once you're able to give them like a concrete picture about something that they suspect is there, because, you know, like once you're only suspecting things, you're still easily misled, because you could still, you know, like some expert can still talk down on you and tell you like, oh, no, you got it all wrong. It's like this, go that way. But then, you know, like if somebody can clarify the picture to you and crystallize it and make it concrete, then you know, like it's kind of like you can't unsee it anymore. And yeah. Now you know. And I think that a lot of people are really close to that point, that like that inflection. And so I don't know, you know, you know my shtick. I'm feeling very optimistic, but I think that we need to, I think we need to keep speaking out. I think we have to kind of treat our fellow human beings with a lot of patience and love,
yep.
and belief in them. You know that they will come around when the time is right.
Right.
And I think that things are going to be okay because, you know, it's this oligarchy that's in a panic. They're flailing.
Yeah.
You know, we could give them a big gift of a world war or, you know, complying with their cockamamie climate lockdowns and 15-minute city and all this. But why not just say like, no, my birthright is to be here a free being. You didn't put me in this world. And you don't have the right to take away my liberty. I'm claiming it. I will say what I want. I will go where I want. That's all we have to do.
Yeah, and we should be doing that. And it's something that we can all probably meet and agree on, that is the way to go forward. Because again, they have no authority, and that is the fact. You know, we didn't give, and like you said, if we are giving agreement, we should be able to revoke that agreement when it's been, you know, soiled, which it has to a very large level. Alex Craner, you're awesome. Can you tell everyone where to follow you? You're very prolific lately. I suggest everyone head over to Substack. So tell people how to find you, Substack and elsewhere.
Well, thank you, Mel. I'm very easy to find on Twitter or X. My handle is @NakedHedgy. And my Substack is Alex Craner's Trend Compass.
Yes, great. Alex Craner, always a pleasure. I love catching up with you. And no matter what, you are definitely a beacon of freedom and liberty. Everywhere you go, everywhere you speak, everything you write inspires me. And so everyone, please follow Alex Craner. It'll make your life much easier going forward and keep you somewhat sane. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you for having me, Mel. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Hey, Patriot pals. So happy that you're looking into gold and silver and protecting your savings for whatever comes ahead. Beverly Hills Precious Metals is our good friend, and we've been working with them for a long time. So you'll be getting a call from them. We'll also follow up here at the Mel K Show because we want to make sure that you're taken care of and you're protected. If you have any questions, please let us know. Right now is the time. There's so much information coming. There's so much chaos. We just want all the patriots out there to be sure that they are protected, they are moving forward, and that we get through the storm together and safe. Whatever may come, just know we, the people of the United States, will prevail. God wins, and protect yourself, and please get in touch with us if you have any questions. So Beverly Hills Precious Metals, they're the best. They'll be in touch. We'll be in touch. You be in touch with us. Let's do this together.
I'm offering a novel approach that could reduce the complications or even chances of getting infections.
Well, certainly I admired Dr. Zelenko's courage. He was always very honest. He was a hero as far as I'm concerned, and always admired him, appreciated everything he said and did, taking a stand for truth. And he was right. That's the bottom line.
I liked outpatient family medicine, preventive medicine, and trying to keep people away from destructive patterns of behavior over time, and this way prevent them from ending up in the hospital.
So that's where we give people hope and peace of mind, knowing that if you take the Zelenko Labs products on a daily basis, we're going to back it up with the Z-Care promise to connect you with a telehealth visit for free with a licensed physician in all 50 states.
You can take your own care into your own control, into your own hands.